secret lair to it.
I want to tell him that, in truth, this is all moot now, but I can see that to him it isn't. His intent means everything. He squints, still struggling to put this all together.
Andreas said he saw you the next summer, coming in here with your dad.
I shake my head until I realize what he means. That was my uncle, Kennet. I sniff, wiping my nose again. We drove up to pack our things and put them away. I look around us, at the familiar, now drab paint on the walls, remembering how I didn't actually want to move a single thing. I wanted it left exactly the way it was. A museum. That was the last time I was here.
I was home that summer, he whispers. All summer. I spent every day looking for you. I wondered how I could have possibly missed the moment you came by.
We went in late. We kept the lights off. Even now it sounds utterly ridiculous how we snuck in like burglars, using flashlights to get what we needed. Kennet thought I'd lost it again. I was worried I would see you. Elliot pulls back, mouth turned down. I hate that this is opening old wounds, but I hate even more that it's making fresh ones. Maybe worried is the wrong word, I correct, though I know even in hindsight it isn't. I had a panic attack the night before Kennet and I got in the car to drive here, and I couldn't stand the thought of Elliot seeing me that way. In the first year after Dad died, at Tufts, I had found this sort of quiet, calm place. Humming, I say, maybe I would have run into your arms, but I worried I would be angry or sad. It was just so much easier to feel nothing instead. He bends, resting his elbows on his thighs, head in his hands. Reaching up, I rub his back, small circles between his shoulder blades. Are you okay? I ask.
No.
He turns and looks over his shoulder at me, giving me a wan smile to take the bite out of his answer. And then his face pales as he stares at me. I can see the realization wash over him again.
Mace.
His face falls.
How do I say I'm sorry? How do I ever?
Elliot, no. In a flash, he bolts up, sprinting out of the room. I stand to follow, but the bathroom door slams, and it's quickly followed by the sound of Elliot's knees landing on the floor and him vomiting. I press my forehead to the door, hearing the flush, the tap running, his quiet groan. Elliot? My heart feels like it's been squeezed inside a fist.
I just need a minute, Mace. I'm sorry, just give me a minute.
I slide down the wall, setting up vigil outside the bathroom, listening to him throwing up again. I wake up under the covers, on my bed, without any memory of how I got here. The only answer is that I fell asleep on the floor in the hall, and Elliot carried me to the bedroom, but the other side of the bed looks untouched, and he's nowhere to be seen. A muffled cough comes from the closet, and relief flushes hot in my limbs. He's still here. It's cold, and I drag the comforter with me out of bed, peeking inside. Elliot is stretched out on the floor, hands behind his head, legs crossed at the ankle, staring up at the cracked, faded stars. He still stretches across the entire room. I haven't been back in here in years, and it seems tiny. How it used to feel like an entire world, a planet inside, amazes me.
Hey, you,
he says, smiling over at me. His eyes are bloodshot, nose red. Hey, you feeling better?
I guess. Still reeling, though.
He pats the floor beside him.
Come here.
His voice is a quiet growl.
Come down here with me.
I lie down next to him, snuggling into his chest when he slides an arm around me, squeezing me close. How long was I asleep? I ask.
A couple hours.
I feel like I could sleep for another decade, but at the same time, I don't want to waste a single second with him. Is there anything else we need to cover? I ask, looking up at him.
I'm sure there is,
he says.
But right now, I'm just sort of rewiring everything inside my head.
I mean, that's understandable. I've had 11 years to process it. You've had just a moment. I want you to know, it's okay if you have some hurt here. I rub my hand over his breastbone. I know it's not going to be this immediate clearing of the air. He takes a few seconds before replying, and when he does, his voice is hoarse.
Losing you was the worst thing that's ever happened to me, and I still feel the echo of that. Those were really hard years, but it helps knowing. As terrible as it is, it helps to know.
He looks at me, and his eyes fill again.
I'm so sorry I wasn't there when Duncan died.
I'm so sorry I didn't tell you. I'm sorry I just vanished. I kiss his shoulder. He reaches up with his free hand, wiping a palm down his face.
Honey, you lost your mom at 10 and your dad at 18. It sucks that you disappeared, but it's not like I don't get it. Holy shit, your life just crumbled that day.
I move my hand under his shirt, up over his stomach, coming to rest above his heart. It was terrible. I press my face to where his neck meets shoulder, trying to push away those memories and inhaling the familiar smell of him. What were those years like for you? He hums, thinking.
I focused on school. If you mean romantically, I had so much guilt that I didn't really get involved with anyone until later.
My heart aches at this. Alex said you didn't bring anyone home until Rachel.
Can we be clear about one thing?
He says, kissing my hair.
Definitively and without question.
What's that? I love the solid feel of him next to me. I don't think I'll ever get enough.
That I love you,
he whispers, tilting my chin so I'll look up at him.
Okay.
I love you too. Emotion fills my chest, making my words come out strangled. I will always miss my parents, but I have Elliot back. Together we were able to resurrect something. His lips press to my forehead.
Do you think we can do this?
He asks, keeping his lips there.
Do we get our chance now to be together?
We've certainly earned it. He pulls back, looking at me.
I've just been lying here thinking. In some ways, I should have figured it out. I should have wondered why Duncan never came back. I just assumed you were both so angry at me.
Over time, I let myself trust my memories more. I reach up, brushing his hair out of his eyes. I realized whether or not you had something casual and consistent with Emma, you did really love me.
Of course I did.
He stares, eyes tight.
I hate that Duncan died thinking otherwise.
There's not really anything I can say to this. I just squeeze him tighter, pressing my lips to the pulse point beneath his jaw. I still love this room, I whisper. Beside me, Elliot goes still.
It's funny you say that. I love it too, but I came in here to say goodbye.
My heart peeks over the cliff, falling off. What does that mean? He pushes up on an elbow, looking down at me.
It means I don't think we belong in here anymore.
Well, no, we won't be in here all the time, but why not keep the cabin and...
I mean, look. Obviously, it's yours, and you should do with it what you want.
He runs his fingertip below my lip and bends, kissing me once. When he pulls away, I chase his mouth, wanting more.
But I want us to move past this closet,
he says gently.
The closet isn't why we fell in love. We made this room special, not the other way around.
I know my expression looks devastated, and I don't know how to reel it back in. I love being in here with him. The best years of my life were in here, and I've never felt safer than I do in the closet. And that's when I know Elliot is already two steps ahead of me.
I bet the way you see it, everything fell apart when we tried to live outside,
he says and leans down, kissing me again.
But that's just shitty luck. It isn't going to be that way this time.
No? I ask, biting back a relieved smile and tucking at his shoulder so he hovers over me.
No.
He grins, settling between my legs, his eyes going a little unfocused. What is it going to be like this time? I slide his glasses off, setting them on one of the empty shelves. Elliot kisses a slow path up my neck.
It's going to be what we wanted before.
Thanksgiving on the floor in our underwear? He growls out a little laugh, pressing his hips forward when I reach down, lowering his zipper.
And you in my bed, every night.
Maybe you'll be in my bed. When he pulls back, his eyes narrow.
Then you have to actually go to your damn house, woman.
I laugh, and he laughs too, but the truth of this sits between us, making him go still. He watches me, and I can tell it's turned into a question during our silence. He's not letting me off the hook. Will you go with me to clean it out? I wince, admitting, I haven't been back in a really long time. Elliot kisses me once and then ducks, kissing my chest over my heart.
I've been waiting for you to come home for 11 years. I'll go anywhere you go.
Now, Wednesday, January 10th. I'm hit with a powerful blast of nostalgia as soon as we open the door. Inside, the Berkeley house smells just as it always has, like home. But I don't think I realized before how home smells like Mom's cedar trunk we used as a coffee table and Dad's Danish cigarettes. Apparently, he snuck them more than I knew. A sunbeam bursting in through the living room window captures a few tiny stars of dust, spinning. I have a woman come and clean the house once a month, but even though things look tidy, the place still feels abandoned. It sends a guilty ache spearing through my middle. Elliot comes up behind me, peeking over my shoulder and into the living room.
Do you think we'll make it inside today?
He softens his joke with a kiss to my shoulder, and I can't exactly blame him for the gentle jab. We've driven by the house twice now, late at night after my shifts at the hospital. I've been too mentally drained to feel up to rejoining my childhood home, but I don't work until tonight, and today I woke up feeling ready. Our plan for now is to sell the Healdsburg house and clean out the Berkeley place to make it ready for visiting Cal faculty who want a furnished rental. But cleaning it out for this means taking all the important memories with me, photo albums, artwork, letters, tiny mementos sprinkled everywhere. I take a step in, and then another. The wood floor creaks where it always did. Elliot follows me in, looking around.
This house smells like Duncan.
Doesn't it? He hums, passing me to walk over to the mantle where there are photos of the three of us, of Kennett and Britt, of Mom's parents who died when she was young.
You know, I've only ever seen one photo of her. The one Duncan had next to his bed.
Her. My mother. Lais to everyone else. May to me. Elliot trails his fingers over a few frames and then picks one up, studying it before looking over at me. I know which one he's holding. It's a picture Dad took of me and Mom at the beach. The wind is blowing her long black hair across her neck, and I'm leaning against her, sitting between her legs, with her arms wrapped around my chest. Her smile was so wide and bright. In it, you can see without having to be told that she was an absolute force of nature. He blinks down to it again.
You look so much like her, it's uncanny.
I know. I am so grateful for the passing of time, that I can see her face and be glad that I inherited it from her, rather than terrified that looking in the mirror would be a greater torture every day as I aged and began to look more like how I remembered her. I kneel down by the cedar trunk, where all our photos, letters, and keepsakes live.
This one should go in our apartment.
The lid to the trunk is halfway up when Elliot says this, and I lower it back down without looking. Warmth spreads so quickly through my limbs that I grow lightheaded. Our apartment? He looks up from the picture.
I was thinking we should move in somewhere together, in the city.
It's only been 10 days since we got back together, but even in that time, the commute between us is a beast. Renting a room from Nancy means that having company stay over is awkward enough to be impossible. And Elliot is simply too far away from the hospital for me to stay with him either. Most nights he meets me for a late dinner in the city and then drives home, and I fall into bed. The one day off I had in that time, 2 days ago, we didn't ever leave his apartment. We made love in his bed, on the floor, in the kitchen. For a brief pulse, I imagine having access to him, to his voice and hands and laugh and wait over me every time I come home, and the desire for it becomes a second pulse in my chest. You'd move to the city? I ask. Elliot sets the picture down and sits beside me on the worn Persian rug.
Do you really question that?
Behind his glasses, his eyes seem nearly amber in the sunlight coming in the window. His lashes are so long. I want to kiss him so much right now my mouth waters. I know we have work to do, but I'm distracted by the stubble on his jaw and how easy it would be to climb into his lap and make love to him right now.
Macy,
he says, grinning under the force of my attention. I blink up to his face. It's a big commute for you.
My hours are more flexible than yours,
he says, and then a wicked light fills his eyes.
And having you in bed every night might help inspire ideas for my dragon porn.
I laugh. I knew it. We move in together on March 1st. It's pouring rain, and our apartment is a tiny one-bedroom, but it has a huge bay window and is only a half block away from the bus line that takes me directly to work. Elliot and his three brothers build a wall of bookcases, and, maybe a little awkwardly, Mr. Nick and Miss Dina bring us a new bed. I would have protested, but it's a beautiful four-poster frame, handmade by one of Mr. Nick's longtime patients. Alex, Elsa, and Liz drive to Nest Bedding to buy all manner of bed dressings, because neither Elliot nor I care what our sheets look like, and Miss Dina makes dinner while we all unpack, crammed into the small space. By 7, the whole apartment smells like bay leaves and roasting chicken, and the rain outside turns from a downpour into a rare, violent thunderstorm. Lightning cracking and bright flashes of light outside. Alex dances as she slips books onto the shelves, and we all watch her covertly, awestruck that something so profoundly graceful could have emerged from this gene pool. Out of a moment of quiet, Liz and George announce that they're having a baby, and the room erupts into noise and motion. Els cranks the music, and the energy whips into a frenzy of laughter and dancing. Elliot pulls me to the side, pressing against me. I've never seen him make this expression before. It's more than a smile. It's relieved delight.
Hey,
he says, and rests his smile on mine. I stretch for another kiss when he pulls away. Hey, you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
He looks around the room as if to say, look at this awesome place.
We just moved in together.
Finally, right? I bite my lip, feeling the urge to scream. I'm so happy. I've never felt this way before. Tonight, we're going to fall asleep together in our apartment, in our bed. When everyone is gone, we'll forget about the boxes we still have to unpack. He'll follow me under the covers with that hungry tension in his eyes, his bare skin sliding over mine until we're a breathless, sweaty tumble. We'll fall asleep, entangled, without even realizing it. And I'll wake up before it's light out and want him again. In the morning, he'll be here. His clothes will be here, and his books, and his toothbrush. I'll pour cereal while he showers. Maybe he'll come find me in the kitchen holding a cup of coffee, and I won't know he's there until I feel the press of his lips to the top of my head. The anticipation I feel for this everyday life of moving around him is so enormous, it fills me with a heavy, shimmering heat. We aren't even really dancing. We're just swaying in place again, like we did at the wedding. But tonight, we have no secrets remaining, and no scary conversations looming. The past decade seems like a foggy blur, like we took a long road trip from one point of the earth and back again, traveling in a wide circle, destined to end up here. Elliot's hands slide lower on my back, his head bends close to mine. George cracks a joke about us needing to get a room. Andreas cracks back that George is the one with the knocked-up wife. And then Miss Dina is off on a tear in the kitchen about babies, and maybe more weddings, and I watch Elliot struggle to block it all out. He winces, shifting his glasses up his nose, and studies me the way he always did, as if he could read my mind one blink at a time. Maybe he could.
"Favorite word," he whispers.
I don't even hesitate. You.
Love and Other Words was written by Christina Lauren and read by Aaron Mallon. Editing and post-production by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Love and Other Words is available in print from Gallery Books. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio. Roomies, by Christina Lauren, read by K.C. Sheridan.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.